Motion Picture Massacre 4, April 11th, 2020? This is like take 6.
Here's a little song. I want to thank WNEW-FM for helping me out with a little song I wrote called Deep in the Heart of Jersey. Oh, the factory smoke will make you choke. Deep in the heart of Jersey, and the city rats running big packs. Deep in the heart of Jersey, oh, the parkway man takes a quarter from your hand. Deep in the heart of Jersey, and Route 17, the traffic there is mean. Deep in the heart of Jersey. For flies deep in the heart of Jersey, and the pizza man says I'm gonna understand. Deep in the heart of Jersey, oh, the dumps in June ain't like perfume. Deep in the heart of Jersey, but it's my state, I think it's great. Deep in the heart of Jersey.
With these trying, fucking Jesus one. Try to be all serious and my voice wants to clear out. With these trying times, I feel that this show continues because it's the only kind of respite I have besides work is to continue talking about movies. And I know if I stopped, I would probably, I don't know, lose my goddamn mind. So if you lost your job, I feel bad for you. If you're working, I feel bad for you because I mean, even with a job like I have, you're still putting yourself out there. You're not putting yourself out there as bad as nurses and doctors and shit, but you're still putting yourself out there, and it sucks. Yes. And when this country gets back to normal, when the world gets back to normal, and there's quotations around the word normal, because I really want to see what happens when we're allowed to go back outside again, you know, and actually interact with people and not have to do it over, like, Zoom and FaceTime and Skype. You know what I mean? It's good that a lot of people that I'm friends with online are all over the country. So I'm kind of used to talking to them via Skype and other kind of functions, video conferencing and whatnot. So tonight's episode, we're going to talk about Sergio Corbucci, like late era Corbucci, because if you talk about Sergio Corbucci, the two films that people kind of bring up and talk about on podcasts are Django and The Great Silence. And I've already done those two films, so I wanted to do kind of mix it up. I want to do his Mexican Revolutionary trilogy, which is The Mercenaries, Compañeros, and How'd I End Up in a Mexican Revolution? I'm probably fucking up that name. But I want to do the two Bud Spencer, Terrence Hill comedies he did, Who Finds a Treasure, Finds a Friend, and Odds and Evens. If you know who Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer are, they, what was it? They partnered in 67 on a film called God Forgives, I Don't. And the men had to kind of pick normal names, so Mario Goriti became Terrence Hill, and Bud Spencer, who was originally, his Italian name is Carlo Pertasoli, who he actually picked that name out of for his love for Budweiser, and his respect for Spencer Tracy. And the two men made about 15 films together, 12 films together, something like that, up until 94. And there's a bit I just played for you that was from Entertainment Tonight ad for a film called Go For It, which actually came out before Odds and Evens. Actually between Odds and Evens and it's like the middle. It's Odds and Evens, Go For It. There's another movie. And then, Who Finds a Friend Finds a Treasure. Where they talk about themselves. And you can clearly, if you hear Terrence Hill's voice, you can hear that he dubs all his own films. Spencer, Bud Spencer, I'm not sure because it definitely sounds like him, but he's very kind of like, he's a much more gruffer sound, so I don't know. Anyway, so we're going to tackle those two films tonight. I hope you're all ready for it. I really haven't watched much. You know, I've been watching a lot when I have days off, when I have time off, and I'm not, you know, me and Holly are not working with the kid to kind of do his schoolwork, because I'm doing the physical therapy stuff, and Holly's doing all the kind of mental and, you know, kind of, because she's much more, she has much more patience for that shit. I don't. If he gets upset, she just kind of lets him do his thing and then kind of cool down and do it. With the physical stuff, I can kind of throw him around the fucking house. Not get my anger out on him, but, like, we have to, like, do, like, you know, balancing and shit like that. And I can make it fun for him, and I can make it also fun for me where I'm actually doing it with him. And the yoga stuff and the ball throwing and balancing and all that stuff, I can make it fun for him because I do it the same. I show him how to do it, and he'll do it. So we both are having a fun time, and it gets, like, a lot of the silliness out of me, and it gets, like, my stress out because I'm able to do stupid shit without, you know, about fall and break my ass. So it's a good time. But one of the things I've been watching is on YouTube, you know, late at night when I'm off, maybe early in the morning when he gets up, he takes over the TV and I'm screwed. I've been watching David Letterman, like, old late night with David Letterman stuff from, like, the 80s. That's on HBO. That's on YouTube. Either the stuff that A&E re-showed in the 90s or in the late 80s, early 90s, or, like, a lot of stuff that's just pulled full episodes with commercials, and it's just a real kind of, like, makes my mind wander, and I'm not really concentrating on anything. It's like comfort food in a weird way. Letterman's always been that for me. I was talking to someone about how they didn't particularly get late-night talk shows, and I'm like, yeah, I agree, but then watching old Letterman episodes, I'm like, oh man, there's something about Letterman that was just unique and original, and it's just too bad that there's nothing out there. All the late night talk shows nowadays are all very similar. Even Conan, who's kind of gone to a half hour show, is still very similar to what everybody else does, and it's just not the same. All right, let's tackle. We're going to do Odds and Evens first, because that came out first, 1978. Like I said, I'm going to play a piece from Entertainment Tonight with them. I'm going to play the interview. I'm going to play a couple of little things from Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill films. Maybe some music. We can find some music from the films because the music is very jaunty and shit like that. So, here, listen to this shit.
Action! Action!
The movie being shot here is Go For It, another guaranteed box office smash starring a giant killer whale from the Miami Seaquarium and Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer. You might not guess it from their names, but they're definitely Italian. And to audiences in almost every country except America, they are superstars. Is it true that your salaries are in the millions of dollars?
Well, should I answer? Yeah, I guess it is. Yes, it is true.
I can answer. We are very rich.
How did a couple of nice Italian boys like you end up in a fix like this in Florida?
Well, it's an ideal set for our adventure picture.
Florida is a good location place.
When Bud and Terrence have appeared separately, their films have not done well. Together, they're enormously popular, and this rich and famous duo came together almost by accident.
It was just a chance. We happened to make a film together in 1970, and it wasn't as a team. But when we were together on the screen, the audience would respond, and they liked it to see us together. And so it happened that more and more we started doing films together, maybe, and then at the end we became a team.
Almost as amazing as their success is that it came in a string of action adventures with no murder and mayhem. In your pictures, nobody gets killed, there's no real blood. Is that something important to you?
Yeah, it's very important to us.
Terrence and I, we don't like the violence, and for this reason our violence is comic violence.
Watching the Italian crew in action was like a stroll down a sunny avenue in Rome. Not the usual on-set tension. Everybody seemed to be having a good time. Even the whale was smiling. Perhaps this would be the movie that would make the team a hit in America. Hill and Spencer hanno conquistato il mondo ridendo. Ma loro rideranno di più quando avranno catturato un pubblico in America. Gene Wolfe for Entertainment Tonight. Ciao.
Bravissimo. From Florida to outer space for this next story, all about some very strange activities on an alien planet. One of our sharp-eyed tape editors was looking at a clip from the 3D epic Space Hunter when he discovered something really out of this world. Since Space Hunter is in 3D, it was shot full frame and then trimmed at the top and bottom. But this scene from the trailer obviously didn't get trimmed. As the spaceship lands on the strange alien planet, keep your eye on the very top of your picture, where some very unusual objects are about to appear. Wait a minute. Let's look at that again. That's right, a parking lot, and full of Earth-type cars, too. Either there's a serious parking problem in outer space, or else those Space Hunter scissors skipped this particular...
Now you heard the boss. That's a job well done.
Hi there.
Okay, well, Breaker. You're getting out by yourself, or do I gotta throw you out?
Always blame him. Our father left your mother. Mary Mum.
Nice guy, your father. He's like a sailor with a woman in every port.
Hey! How can you say such a thing about our Poppy?
Odds and Evens from 1978, also known as Pyrrhic Despair, and Trinity Gambler for High Stakes. Franco Nero had this issue too, allegedly what I heard. I never actually seen German film releases of Nero's films, but allegedly in certain countries, after Django was so popular, every film that he made, Django, the title was Django, whatever the hell it is, you know, quote, whatever the heck actually the film is about. With Hill, Trinity was the same way. A couple of films of his after Trinity was made were retitled Trinity, blah, 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 blah. This film was directed by Corbucci, written by Mario Alamedino and Bruno Corbucci. It's about Johnny Frippo, who is a competitive, you know, he's competitive in football, which makes kind of no sense, because why would the Army-Navy game have a Navy lieutenant as their quarterback? Huh. Yeah, I know. It's kind of the kind of convolutedness of Italian films that they're like, oh, yeah, sure. Then when those are truly like Navy college, Army college, you know what I mean? Those recruits go into the Navy and Army, but they also go to college for the time, whatever. Anyway, but he's a very competitive guy who is also a very competitive gambler. He gets put in charge to stop a local gang of bookmakers and kind of shysters who are kind of putting gambling, pretty much putting like slot machines and, you know, setting up gambling everywhere they can in this this area of Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale. Blah.
So Johnny's told about this guy named Charlie, who is known as, you know, one of the best gamblers of his time, right? And Charlie and Johnny meet pretty much before this, accidentally, reminiscing about their love for beans and onions, which has got to be an Italian thing, because I don't know. And also the gamblers, you know, have a nice fight with them. And kind of chaos ensues. Johnny kind of... The one thing about Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer's characters in these films is that Terrence Hill's character is a very mischievous kind of devil-may-care, like Sly Fox. He usually gets the girl, or at least he's the one who gets attracted to the girl, and the girl gets attracted to him and kind of has a little bit of a thing. Maybe not full-on relationship, but especially there's a little bit of attraction there with the women. Bud Spencer's character is kind of a brute with the heart of a child. You know what I mean? He's very nice and easygoing. Has kind of crushes on the wrong people. Like in this film, he has a crush on the nun that he constantly deals with, who he's driving into town so she can bet on horse racing and dog racing and stuff like that, football games, so she can save money for the orphanage she works in, because it's going to go tits up. Johnny kind of persuades Charlie to drive him to Miami, because he has to go there, and Charlie's going there because he's transporting dolphins. I don't know. I don't get it. But he's transporting dolphins on a big rig. And Charlie gets, you know, Johnny gets Charlie in trouble, pretty much with the same guys we're going to constantly meet through this film, losing a bunch of money and pretty much giving them his truck without his permission. And at first, these two men are kind of at rivals, or at least Charlie can't stand Johnny for what he's done to him by losing his truck. Actually, losing his truck in gambling debts. But then you find out by the middle of the film, because constantly there's things like so Johnny has to get a job, so he works as a driver in like a, not a derby, yeah, a derby, but like kind of a NASCAR derby, not a crash derby, but all the cars are beat up, and then for some reason Johnny's also there, and he's supposed to lose, and then the two men kind of compete in that, and they compete in other things. You constantly see Johnny playing gambling, you know, and losing horribly, or winning very well. And then you find out, by about the middle of the film, this is like almost a two-hour film, it's 110 minutes, that Johnny and Charlie are related. They have the same father, different mothers, right? And Charlie, because Charlie's got this kind of big heart, he finds out the father's is blind and is living off benefits, so he brings him to the nuns in the orphanage so he can stay there. All the while, as you find out, that their father isn't blind. He's just kind of milking us. He doesn't want to work. He's just one big con. Kind of like what Charlie does. Kind of like what Johnny does. And the interesting part is that they're working this angle to get Charlie to kind of go back to being the great gambler that he was, which means that they're just going to rig games and rig poker games and highlight games, which is interesting. There's actually a 10-minute segment in the film where Charlie's character impersonates an ailing highlight player and rigs the game to win. You know, he pretty much wins against this guy, making them millions. All the while, the gang is unbeknownst and they don't even see it, because you can't tell it's, you know, Bud Spencer, you know, the guy he's impersonating is 3 feet smaller than him and 20 pounds and 200 pounds lighter. And the only difference is that he has his big kinky hair, so Charlie just steals a a wig and goes out there and plays as him. Now, I like this film. I like all these Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill films. Mainly because they're a kind of a Looney Tune fashion to them. The fights are bloodless. It's controlled chaos when they have battles. And it's men pretty much who seem that they can take on these two guys, unable to do it, and they just get their asses whooped every fucking time. Regardless, Charlie and Johnny have like unbeknownst strength and just like superheroes who are able to take beatings and continue on. And it's actually quite fun to watch them both kind of fight it out, along with trying to get along with each other. Ultimately, the two men kind of become friends and become brothers. Like every one of these films, the two characters, unbeknownst to each other, kind of start to get along and start to work at that angle to kind of take over this gang. Would this be the first film? Any of their Terrence Hill, Bud Spencer films are worth jumping on and just watching. So when I suggest you to see this, yes. If I'm telling you about it, yes. It's on Prime. If you want to pay, if you're paying for Prime, even if you're paying for Prime, it's on there for like $1.99 rental, and it's a really good copy. Like, so there must be an HD release somewhere in this, you know, that someone hasn't released that they're renting, like that they have the rights to show. It's so fucking fun and weird. You know what I mean? Like I said, like Charlie is driving around. He's just doing odd jobs. One, he's got, you know, he's a truck driver, so he constantly picks up something and kind of drives from one place to the next. Mostly through Florida. And the second time we introduce him as a driver, he is carrying a bunch of dolphins. And Charlie loses his Johnny loses Charlie's truck through gambling, and Johnny kind of steals it away. And then the next day, when Charlie finds him, he says, "What'd you do to my truck? What'd you do to my you know?" He says, "Oh, I let him free. I felt bad." And you're like, "What the fuck, really?" Right? It's so fucking weird. So anyway, I definitely tell you to try it. Check it out. Watch the motherfucker. All right. Let's go. Take a little bit of break. Let's do some stuff. Watch some videos, whatever. I mean, I'll play some more stuff. Maybe a new trailer for the next film. We'll talk about the next film. All right.
Now, in this film, I notice that you're not recording any direct sound.
Speech usually in Westerns of minor importance because we use every nationality, French, Mexican, American. It is often better for the actors to count than to speak. For example, the Frenchman would say, "Un, deux, trois." The American says, "One." That means yes, but it could mean anything. It's unimportant. That's why I hate Westerns.
After this, Mr. Corbucci, what films will you do?
A Western, naturally.
Well, there's the Lord's Prayer and the Act of Contrition, maybe. Easy. Hold on, Captain. I've got a secret that may change your whole life. And you'll thank me.
Thanks.
Yeah, come on! An attack, come on!
Me gonna go poke and go storm break into a paw.
Man, who's gonna tell Mama you break so I got no voice?
Hey, the steering wheel's gone.
You got your foot on the brake hold.
Oh my God!
Look out, Charlie! Now!
Get in the way, boss!
Yeah! Keep moving!
Yeah!
Through here!
Ah!
What's the matter?
Who finds a friend finds a treasure, also known as Chi Trevo un Camino Trazino, whatever. A friend is a treasure, which is, if you look online, I happen to be letterbox everything else. Who a friend finds, it's a friend is a treasure, which is dumb. Italian adventure comedy movie directed by Sergio Cavucci, filmed in Key Barcio, Florida. Yet another, they did a bunch of films in Florida, these two guys. Different directors, directed by Cavucci. In the titles, it actually comes out as written by Emin Amando, who's the guy who did the last film, and Carbucci, which I think it's the same, Sergio. I don't think it's Bruno Carbucci. It doesn't really tell you, but whatever. Plot of this film. Alan Hill is an introverted gambler who is kind of at his last will. He gets a map from his uncle about a island off the coast of the Atlantic, off of Florida, that holds a treasure. So this guy, Alan, has to get away as best he can. He comes across Charlie, Bud Spencer, who is an actor who's being hired by a jam company, which makes very disgusting jam, to embark on a long promotional boat trip. Alan stows away on the boat, causing kind of havoc to Charlie, whose only thing he has on there besides beer and, steaks is a bunch of really rotten jam, which he throws overboard, and a little parakeet that talks to him. And the chaos that ensues is that, Charlie makes a big steak and a couple beers, cracks open a couple beers. He hears something upstairs, goes up. Alan comes out, eats all his food, and hides again. And ultimately, Charlie finds him and kind of throws him off the boat. He feels bad because, like I said, Bud Spencer's character has a heart of gold, so he can't really kind of let this guy drown. So he's going to be like, all right, I'm going to bring you to the closest island I can find and leave you there, and the Coast Guard will pick you up. Okay. While Charlie's sleeping one night, Alan kind of redirects the boat to go to the island that he has to. Charlie doesn't particularly like this. They have a big fight, and they both fall off the boat and are unable to get back on the boat before it, pretty much boats out of camera. Both men then swim to the island, where they find the inhabitants of the island, which are a combination of black actors and dark-skinned Italian actors with Afro wigs on. Pretty fucking awful. They meet them. They feel threatened, so they have a big fight. The two men are able to beat the ever-living hell out of a bunch of the people, but the queen of the island stops everything before shit goes fucking left. And you find out from the queen that her love, a Chinese army soldier who's on the other side of the island, who still thinks it's World War II, is kind of bunkered himself around a safe. Put up a barricade around the safe and is, protecting it all his life. And they realize that, hey, maybe that's where the money is. So they go around and start looking. They get accosted by a bunch of biker gang pirates. I'm not kidding. They're like British guys with fucking full, black leather pants, all their jackets, very fey kind of guys, but they're carrying big fucking swords and they beat the shit out of them. And they retreat. They find an old Japanese tank buried on the island because I guess the Japanese got that close to our country in World War II. I don't know. Okay. Sure. I don't know, man. It's just a weird, okay. Anyway. Our two kind of guys use the tank to... trying to think. Use the tank to get into the barricade with this Japanese... They use the tank to kind of get into this barricade, to get into that thing. They ultimately, win the day. And Alan's so kind of like dead set against getting his money that he tries at all costs to kind of do it without Charlie noticing. But then you find out that the Japanese soldier tells them, hey, this is what you guys are probably looking for. And it's million. I think it's over $260 million. But then you find out later in the film that the Japanese stole it to kind of use it as, like, you know, money to kind of help with their war effort. But then they find out it's fake. And this kills Charlie and Alan. Because Alan is so dead set against money. And Charlie's like, that would be nice. I wouldn't have to do anything anymore. I wouldn't have to work these dumb jobs to get paid. Right? The gamblers who Alan owned a bunch of money figure out that they're on this island because they beat the uncle up pretty much to tell him that on the island. The pirates show back up. All hell breaks fucking loose. You have our queen of this group of idiots. The great thing about the group of natives is that they don't speak like just hubba lubba kumba. It's kind of like that, but it's also like hubba lubba kumba numa. And some other weird shit that's going on. It's just silly shit. They like speak in like American words and hubba dubba and all this other stuff. And all shit breaks loose. The guys ultimately win. They find out that the money that they actually had was not real. And actually is real, and they get totally screwed by it. It's another great kind of knock out of the park. The, you know, the things that people would find kind of hard to comprehend is the kind of the blatantness of having black Italian, you know, dark skinned Italians playing black guys. Yes, in 81, that's kind of racist, but you know, it still was not like, oh my god, holy shit, burn it to the ground. It's very much like these are the best actors I have, and they're dark skinned. So let's get a whole bunch of other people who are dark skinned to play the rest of the natives. It's fun, it's silly, it's stupid, but I had a good time watching it. All right, that wraps this up. I don't have the information. You guys don't really email me or call me, so I don't really give a shit. If you guys want to, find it on the website. All right, till the next episode, which is Easter, which is tomorrow. Bye.